Blog Talk Radio.
The next component of the human worldview is law. The postmodern definition of law is very simple: a system of man-made rules enforced by varying institutions. Yet a careful look at history reveals something very different. The word law comes from the ancient Hebrew word Torah. And frankly, that is the predominant definition most people think of when they talk about law. You watch Fox News, all the experts, you talk to a guy that's been in the judiciary his whole life, or an attorney. This is basically their worldview. It's man-made laws that that we make and then we enforce with different institutions. It doesn't even matter what country you're in. That's just what law is. And I'm going to say to you that that's very simpletonian. That's not real clever. But that's how most people operate, because they think very carnally. I'm going to show you what law really is. And I'm going to try to put it in words that will help you understand why the church has greater authority than any law made in Iowa. Why the disciples, when they were told by the lawmakers, "You shall not speak in the name of Jesus again," they said, "It is better that we obey God and not man." See, there's a place for proper civil disobedience. We are not subjects of the American perverted law system that creates reams of goofed up laws every year that contradict what God has said. And I will never obey any of their goofy laws that they make that poke God in the eye. I'm not subject to them, and I won't obey them. You know, and the time may come. You know, I've heard my dad say it my whole life. We're getting a lot closer to it now. It's already started happening in Canada. It's happening in Europe. Ministers like me who get up and preach against homosexuality are being hauled off to court and jail and fined tens of thousands of dollars. And mark my words, if they do that to me, I'll go right along just like all the apostles before me did. And in the end, they're the ones that are going to be in all the trouble, not me. God will deal with them. I have no doubt about that. He's got my back. He's got Pastor Larry's back, Pastor Chase's back. And, you know, incidentally, even local officials that lob grenades at the Church of God, just keep watching the paper. It ain't over. So law comes from the ancient Hebrew word Torah. The law, or the Torah, is the natural expectations of the Creator articulated to His creation. Now let me explain to you the difference between a man-made law and a natural law, or a Torah. Now, I understand that over time the word Torah has come to be thought of as the Pentateuch, or the laws of Moses that was given to Israel. They call that the Torah. That is, in a sense, what the Torah is, if you're specifically speaking of that code. But the word Torah is much broader, far more generalized than that. It is the word law, and it means natural law, the law of Creator, Torah, all His laws. For example, E equals MC squared is Torah. It is the law of the Creator, and you have to obey it. It's something that God built into the universe, and you won't find that in the Torah. You won't find necessarily E equals MC squared in the Pentateuch or the five books of Moses. Nevertheless, E equals MC squared, physical law, is Torah. Does that make sense? So when I'm using the word Torah, I am including the Torah of the Jewish community, but I'm speaking of Torah. Torah, law, is the natural expectations of our Creator as they are articulated to His creation. Now, here's my illustration between the difference between what the little goobers in Des Moines make for a law tomorrow and what God has made as a law. And they're not all goobers, just a lot of them. If the supermajority of the entire American Senate, the entire House of Representatives, joined by all of Europe, the nations of Africa and Asia, notwithstanding the Swiss remaining neutral, in the greatest act of international legal solidarity in the history of the world, were to decide tomorrow morning that gravity should be outlawed and banned from all nations, there's not one tiny thing they could do to enforce that law. Because that's Torah. So if you're just a law professor, what's the first cause of law? Well, that came from an explosion. There was a drip of goo on the back of a crystal. Okay. And you have a PhD. See, that's the difference between Torah and the decision our little city council might decide to make next week on vicious dogs. Or whether or not to pray. Whether you believe in Jesus or not is beside the point. The point is that there is the existence of immutable law. An immutable law, Torah, governs the operation of the entire universe, and there's not one thing you can do about it, chump. And if you're intellectually honest, you must answer this question. What is the first cause of natural law? Because men and all their governments throughout world history didn't make a single one of those laws. But they all have to obey them. Look at the point Jesus made about the preexistence of Torah in his comments during the Sermon on the Mount. He said this in Matthew 5:45. I know people read this and go, what does he mean? Now you'll understand it. He says, that ye may be the children of your Father, which is in heaven, for he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and he sendeth rain on the just and on the unjust. You see, there was a law that governed the operation of the entire universe long before any three members of a group of five formed a majority. And that law cannot be changed. It can only be rebelled against or obeyed. And Jesus warns, along with all the prophets before him, if you get in a contest with that level of law, you will lose. My Father, who is in heaven, is the first cause of natural law. My Father who is in heaven is Torah. And he maketh the rain to fall. And he maketh the sun to rise. And none of your governments can ever change what he maketh. The first cause of the institution of law is listed in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5:45. Jesus called him Father. Both good people and bad people are subjects to natural law, whether they like it or not. And if you want to know the preeminent, most fundamental natural laws, the ultimate Torah, Jesus referred to it in the story of the Garden of Eden. You know, the first thing that existed, the first Torah, the first law, the natural law that cannot be violated, no matter what you do, no matter how you rebel, no matter how many times you try to outmaneuver it, the first preeminent Torah of God is the spiritual family. He is Father, and those who obey are His children. The second most powerful Torah, the second most powerful natural law that you can't get away from, established in the Garden of Eden, is the existence of the natural family. You can pass all the laws you want to undermine the natural family. Jesus pointed back and said, from the beginning, it was one man and one woman, speaking of the issue of polygamy. Polygamy was popular in the days of Jesus. Jesus taught against it. He said that wasn't so from the beginning. It was one man, one woman for life. He was referring to the Torah, the natural law of God. Marriage, say it with me, traditional marriage is natural law. It is like gravity. You cannot defy it. You can only rebel against it. But you'll never change it. Both good people and bad people are subject to natural law, whether they like it or not. Jesus points out that God reigns on the just and He reigns on the unjust. He makes the sun to rise on everybody because He is law. He is Torah. And that's a very broad and generalized explanation of the existence of natural Torah or natural law. Now let me take that exact same immutable and unchangeable principle and relate it in a way that's just as true as what I said about gravity. You can bang pots and pans together all day and night. You can shout your wish list into a megaphone and give ugly labels to anyone and everyone who disagrees with you. You can threaten your way into legislative acts of pandering politicians and lawmakers until you make as many new laws as you wish to make. But after it's all over, traditional biblical marriage will still be the wellspring of human life and common national and international virtues. And homosexuality will still be a chain of bondage that, in contrast to a virtue of life, it will always be a chain that drags you to death. Even an epidemiologist will tell you that homosexuality is a death style. There's not one single thing any man-made law can do to change that because it's natural Torah. It is as old as man. It has always been true and it will always stay true. It's like gravity and there's not one single thing you can do about it. You can get the finest debaters on earth, for example, to show that freedom from the fear of heights is a civil right. And that only closed-minded acrophobic people, acrophobia being the fear of falling, only closed-minded acrophobic people support hateful legislation that limits personal freedom by unfairly requiring stair rails and safety ledges on public and private balconies. You can demand your freedom and protest against bigoted acrophobes who refuse to allow you to get to the top floor of the Benson Building without a safety key, because you might fall off. You can stage large get-togethers and invite all the media. You can have a candlelight vigil on the top of a skyscraper against the unkind, hateful, narrow-minded, old-fashioned acrophobes. And you can lunge from the top of every tall building in America and you'll still hit the ground. And you can do it while singing the, was it Boyz II Men? I believe I can fly. I believe I can touch the sky. I think about it every night and day. Spread my wings. You can demand your freedom and protest against bigoted acrophobes. You can jump and you'll still hit the ground because it's natural law and it exists outside of your jurisdiction. It existed before you were here. It will be here after you're gone. And if there are laws that exist which men did not create, then logic dictates man is powerless to change those laws. He can neither change them nor the consequences that will follow when they're broken because he didn't make them. That's law. That's Torah. And so you see there is a storm coming. It's important that people who put their whole profession in the subject of law understand Torah exists. And it's bigger than you. And foolish to try to make your laws go against natural laws. Utterly foolish and incredibly arrogant. And there will be a penalty. Let me say this to you. There was the anti-acrophobe protester on the top of the building singing, I believe I can fly. The candles were lit, the news, the press was there. There were all kinds of politicians eager to stand in solidarity with the anti-acrophobic people, pledging their solidarity with the movement that they would pass legislation, freeing them from the liberty-resistant, ugly laws that restricted people from being able to just jump and fall off balconies at will. And the most horrible thing was when the first person jumped. Because before they hit the ground, they realized they became the very acrophobic person they had hated so much in their life. Because they were falling and they too were very afraid. The same will be of the homosexual community. Someday they'll jump. They'll die. But it's too late when you've jumped. And you'll become very homophobic yourself when you face the judge and the maker of natural Torah, because everybody's going to hit the ground. This is why Jesus said, every knee will bow and every tongue shall confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. You're either going to do it willingly or you will have a conversion experience after you die. But you're going to get converted and you're going to say out of your mouth, I was wrong. In the early moments of Jesus' sermon, he made it a point to say that his laws of the kingdom were just as real and just as binding and punishable when they were broken as the very civil law that ordered the lives of his audience. This is very important for attorneys to understand, for judges to understand. This is what Jesus taught in his sermon. Jesus is the rock. His words, the sayings he gives us in this sermon, are the stones and brick we must use to build our lives and remain safe during dangerous times. So first of all, I want you to go to Matthew chapter 5. I want you to go to verse 19. And let's look at what Jesus says, because he is telling us, my kingdom laws, my kingdom is invisible. My laws deal primarily with motive, and so you can feel very comfortable violating them, but I assure you they are just as real as the laws that are enforced by Roman soldiers, and my laws will be punishable, and they will be enforced eventually, but they are just as binding, and they're just as punishable when they're broken as the lower level civil law that orders your natural life as a part of the Roman system. Matthew 5, verse 19. Whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments and teach men so, he shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I say unto you that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. Let me just point out to you, the scribes and Pharisees were the civil litigators. They were the doctors of the law. They were the attorneys. They were the people who enforced Jewish law in the court system. He's saying that unless you exceed their righteousness according to my laws, unless you obey the laws I've just given you, which are superior to the laws that they enforce, you will not enter my kingdom. You shall in no case enter into the kingdom from heaven. In other words, don't think that because Jesus' kingdom is invisible and your submission is voluntary right now, don't think that because judgments against those who break the laws of this kingdom are temporarily postponed, that a day of reckoning is not surely coming. It's like the little story I just gave you of the anti-acrophobic person who jumped from the building and got converted on his way down. Judgment's coming. You will be converted. His laws will be enforced. It's just that there's this little time of postponed judgment, delayed judgment, and you can begin to think that you're getting away with it all. You are never going to get away with any of it. Jesus said, every I shall be dotted, every T will be crossed. You'll answer for every idle word that ever came out of your mouth when you get before God. That wouldn't make the user-friendly circuit today. Then Jesus moves to verse 21 and 22, and he says that not only are his kingdom laws just as binding, his Torah is just as powerful as civil law, but they are superior to civil law. Let me translate that to right now tonight. The words of Jesus Christ, the law of his Torah, natural law, the law of the Scripture, is superior to every part of the Iowa Code. Matthew 5:21. You've heard it that it was said of them of old time, thou shalt not kill, and whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. He's not disagreeing with that, by the way. He's just pointing out that this is civil law. These are the laws of Moses. This is the Torah that they would think of, that God gave them to deal with human beings interacting with one another. But now he's saying, but you're missing the point. When Moses gave you these laws and God inspired that he give you these laws had a purpose. The purpose was to punish what was punishable. A man cannot see into the heart of another human. A man cannot punish his motive. But the inspiration for the existence of Torah was that man had to be punished if he broke that barrier and began to act out in a deviant way, violating his heart. And so Jesus is pointing out, you've heard that it's been said in old time, if you do what's wrong, you'll be punished. But he's saying, you're missing the point of why they did it in the old times. The law has always tried to deal with your internal thinking process. The law in the Old Testament that punished death with capital punishment, the purpose of it was to get into your thoughts before you committed the crime and get you to do right. And he's saying, you know, you guys are so motivated to deal with exterior, you want to deal with crime after it's happened, and you've lost the point of the law being there. And the reason Moses gave you these laws is he wanted, 500 years ago, for Israeli people to deal with their hearts, because what was in their heart would eventually lead to them acting in a criminal way. And in the modern day of Jesus, as he was teaching, the scribes and Pharisees did not talk about motive. They put away the weightier things, Jesus said, of the law. They didn't talk about the internal issues. They didn't deal with motives. Jesus pointed out they themselves would get real tedious about how much to tithe out of their garden, but that they wouldn't deal with internal issues inside of themselves and inside of people. So Jesus isn't saying the law is bad, the law is wrong, the law is flawed. He's saying your interpretation of the old laws is flawed because the people who've been teaching you about what they see and interpret of the laws in the old time, what they're saying to you is flawed. So that's important. I hear all kinds of preachers read this verse and say that, see, the law is imperfect. The law was flawed. No, it wasn't. Jesus goes on in just a few verses to say it wasn't. He says, I haven't come to do away with it. It was perfect. It's just that your interpretation screwed up. And Jesus points out the point of the law, which punished actions, was that you needed to check your motives, even way back then. And so he says, in my kingdom is going to be superior to the way it was in the old. You've heard that it was said of them in old time, thou shalt not kill. And whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. But whosoever shall say, thou fool, shall be in danger of hell fire. Jesus is talking about civil litigation here. He's talking about the council. Their purpose was to deal with criminal acts. He's talking about, you know, verbal abuse. He's talking about all these things that were going on in his culture. When he was there, he's pointing out that the way that their civil law process worked on that day when he was preaching. And he's going back and saying, you've been hearing about the purpose of law your whole life from these scribes and Pharisees, and you've heard that it was said of old time, this and this and this, but I say to you that even back in the old times, the point was your motive has to be dealt with. And so he says, my kingdom laws, my Torah is superior to your understanding of civil law because I am telling you that my kingdom will punish the interior motives of your heart before the act is committed. In fact, we learn as we study carefully, there will be people who went to church and lived well, did not act out in a deviant way, did not necessarily commit criminal acts, didn't necessarily break the Ten Commandments in an exterior way, but at the judgment, they will be in trouble because of what was going on in here and between these. And Jesus is saying, my Torah is greater than your civil laws because I'm going to deal with the root of everything. Does that make sense? And then it's in this Sermon on the Mount, you've heard me say this a million times, Jesus says during this sermon, and he does it to illustrate this point, that there will be many in that day who will say, but Father, have I not cast out demons in your name? Have I not prophesied in your name? See, what are they doing? They're pointing to exterior behaviors. They did good things. They lived an expressed, professed Christian life. But he says, depart from me. I have never known you. There was an inside problem inside their heart and between their ears. They were a rebel against God their whole life. They were just smart enough to hold it back where no one could see it. And so the Torah of God, the Creator's communicated will to His creation, you can't litigate out of it. You can't legislate out of it. It's never going to change. It's binding to everybody. The good people and the bad people are subject to the same law of the rotation and orbit of this earth. And the rain that falls on the bad ones falls on the good ones because God is the Almighty giver of the Torah. In other words, you're well aware of the civil laws that have for many hundreds of years punished those who murder, but my laws are superior to civil law, which are limited to punish a crime after it has been committed, because I demand that the crime be judged at its root long before it is committed. There's a storm coming. The rains are going to descend upon you. The tornadic wind is going to beat and thrash against your home. What you believe about Torah will determine whether or not you or the society you live in will survive the storm. Both men in the parable built homes. Both men shared this similarity. They both accepted words, ideas, thoughts, and opinions of someone in order to build. All which take place inside your head. All which take place first in your heart before you ever act. Both wise men and foolish men build homes and they live in them, and both wise men and foolish men possess a worldview. And it's built with words, ideas, thoughts, and opinions. Jesus is the rock. Say it with me. Jesus is the rock. A healthy dose of Jesus' psychology will keep you on the rock. A healthy dose of Jesus' sociology will keep your marriage on the rock. A healthy dose of Jesus' understanding of law will keep you on the rock. Ideas have consequences. And your worldview is made up of ideas that you assume to be true. The Sermon on the Mount provides you with all the truths you need in order to begin reforming your worldview, changing your mind, and using that mind God gave you as a sharp tool instead of a liability. The values, the suggestions, the thoughts, the ideas and opinions of this world are in competition with the worldview offered by Jesus Christ. And your worldview as a Christian must be realigned in agreement with Him. Number one, your theology, the foundation of your worldview must be that Jesus Christ is Lord and He represents absolute truth. Number two, your philosophical worldview must understand the existence of the spirit world as it is described in the Bible. Number three, your scientific worldview must be used as a tool to get to know God better through a study of His wonderful creation. Number four, your biological worldview must be intelligent design and unapologetic creationism. Number five, your sociological worldview must honor, protect, and respect the institution of biblical marriage, which rejects the Western idea, as you heard this morning, of dating. Number six, your psychological worldview must recognize man as a three-part being, not a two-part being, and reject the tendency to view man's problems two-dimensionally with medication. Number seven, your jurisprudential worldview must recognize the superiority of the natural Torah of God and the kingdom laws of Jesus Christ, which promise to soon confront all men's motives, whether they committed an act criminally, outwardly, or not. And we'll talk about the impact of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount with regard to the human political worldview, the economic worldview, and the historical worldview as the series continues. I want to close with the words of Jesus, Matthew 7:24. Therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man, which built his house upon a rock, and the rains came, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and beat upon that house, and it fell not, for it was founded upon a rock.